The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and as always, I'm joined in the studio by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. Our guest this week is not only a legend at his own club, but respected throughout the whole of non-league football, and his statistics speak for themselves. 10 years at one club, 2 promotions, 3 playoff campaigns, almost 450 appearances and 142 goals, ranking him second only to the great Tony Berman on that particular list. He spent time at Maidstone and also in the United States, but you'll know him as one of Dartford's all-time greats. So it's a warm welcome to the now-retired Elliot Bradbrook.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me in.
Good to see you, Elliot. Thanks for coming in and joining us. We know you've got a very busy schedule, so it's really delight to have you with us. I know me and Steve were particularly looking forward to this particular podcast. Your season, indeed your career, is been cut short by injury at the end. You watched Dartford's last few games of the season. What did you make of how it ended? It all ended rather sadly, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a shame. It wasn't obviously the way that we would have liked to end the season. Certainly not how I would have liked to have ended, you know, my career at Dartford. But I've been very lucky with injuries throughout my career. You know, I haven't had too many problems, certainly over the last few years anyway. So that's just the way it goes. But I mean, as a team, certainly didn't finish the way we were hoping or expecting it to. I think with six weeks or so left of the season, I think there was talk around whether we could snatch that third spot. And as it's finished, we didn't even make it into the playoffs at all. So it's obviously been a very, very disappointing last few weeks of the year.
What did you make of the send-off you were given on Easter Monday against Billericay? He was injured, of course, so you couldn't play, but guard of honour and so forth?
Yeah, Jack Smedley, the manager of the club, told me he was going to give me a guard of honour. And I said, look, Jack, I'm not the Queen. I do not want a guard of honour. But they did it anyway. So I just wanted to get almost on and off as quickly as I could, really. That's not really my thing. But it was obviously, you know, it was a special moment for me. I got to take my little boy out onto the pitch with me, which I was planning to do, obviously hoping I was going to be playing for that last game. I wanted to take him out onto the pitch with me, but still managed to do it. And, you know, it was a really nice send-off. You know, there were lots of people there. I've had so many messages from different people over the last few weeks to, you know, give me their best wishes and their thanks and all that kind of stuff, which has it's been really nice.
The cheers you got as well when you went across the ground at one point, didn't you? I don't know, that was before the game at half time, and you went across and walked back, and yeah, all you did was walk across the pitch, and they were still chanting your name.
Tony Berman was in the stand behind the dugout, and he told me to stop milking it. but no, my family, my dad, my mum and dad attend a lot of the games, and they stand over by that wooden man over the other side, so that was where they were standing for the game. So when it got to half time, I thought I'd just go over there, say hello, get my little boy onto the pitch and let him run around. I had to give some awards out to the kids' penalty shootout, and my little boy enjoyed being in all those photos. He was giving a big grin, so he was he was loving it.
How did you know that it was time to retire?
I think I probably knew it was time to retire in the summer before, if that made sense. Yeah, I spoke to you, didn't I, in the bar after the game, after the loss in the playoffs to Braintree. And obviously, you know, I was kind of fully expecting to retire last year. You know, in my mind that was going to be my last year. Obviously, in my mind again, I wanted it to end on a really big high, where I thought, you know, I really honestly felt we were going to win the league that year, and it was going to go out with a bit of a bang. But obviously when that didn't happen, you know, you have to reevaluate things. And I was in my mind actually quite surprised. You know, I was like, oh, what do I do now, sort of thing, because I was fully expecting to stop, but I kind of felt that I didn't want to end it that way. You know, obviously I was bitterly disappointed with the way that season ended. I think everyone was, with the change in management as well. Both Flan and Coyley are big mates of mine. You know, I've known them for many, many years, and obviously knew it was going to be a transitional phase for the club at that time. And I wanted to help them out, so I think it was a bit of both, really. Over the summer, obviously, I had some talks with the family and stuff, because again, I was leading up to maybe quitting in that summer, but just wanted to give it an extra year, I think, because of the situation, how it ended, and obviously the changes that were going on in the club at the time.
I think that's probably one of the toughest interviews I've done, as we stood in the bar talking about that Braintree game and you feeling like it was the end, and we're obviously very upset about that. You took it personally, didn't you? You know, when things didn't go right at Dartford.
Yeah, I always did. I think my family would be the first one to tell you that. I think as as captain for so many years, I did take it personally. When we lost games, or when things weren't going right, I do take it very personally. I felt it was my responsibility to drag the team up and to win games, and I was fortunate to be able to kind of do that a few times over the years. But a lot of times I was standing in the middle of the pitch when it wasn't going right and thinking, look, I've got to do something here because we're going to lose this or whatever. And it was no different that year. I felt the responsibility of the team and the club, and again, it didn't work out how we wanted it to, so everyone was obviously very disappointed.
So what has this season been like?
It's been a really good change, actually. Obviously, like I said, it hasn't ended how we wanted it to end. But, I spoke to Coyley and Flan in the summer, and I said they knew I was going to give up as well. And they managed to convince me not to. And I said, look, I don't want to be captain anymore. I don't want that sort of responsibility, because, again, I do take it very personally. And it not that I wasn't going to continue to give, my best efforts for the team and for the club, but I couldn't commit to being around as much as I was, and they were happy to do that. So I've only trained once a week this year. I've only been in on a Thursday night rather than a Monday and a Thursday. That's been obviously a great help because I do work long hours, and it's allowed me to be at home more, throughout the course of the week. And my body's actually felt better for it, rather than playing on a Saturday and before you know it you're almost back in again on a Monday night. But it's been nice to have that sort of length of time, if you like, sort of 4 or 5 days before needing to come back in again. So kind of mentally and physically it's been a really good change for me. And to be honest, if I hadn't kind of already made the decision that I was gonna retire, I think I would have enjoyed working under that kind of situation for another year. Some of the boys have been joking that I need to be their agent because they'd like that sort of deal as well. but no, it's been a really good change for me this year, actually.
Did the pair of them try and talk you around again?
Yeah, so I sat that, they wanted to get their business done quite early. They wanted to talk to players early this year to make sure they're able to kind of keep hold of the group that they want to keep hold of. I spoke with Flan probably 6 to 8 weeks ago, something like that, and he just said, look, I need to kind of know where your head's at and what you're thinking about for next year. Obviously, they'd love to keep me on the same kind of arrangement that we had this year. And I was just open and honest with him and said, look, I'd always seen this as being, my last year, if you like. I didn't want to confirm anything to him right then, but, I wanted to go away and speak with the wife and have all that sort of stuff. But I kind of knew it was coming to the end anyway. So it didn't take me too long before I sort of went back to him and said, look, this is going to be my last year and that kind of thing. So they were good as gold about it. As I said, I think they kind of probably expected it themselves. But again, that's probably why they wanted to know quite early, where my head was at.
So sitting here today knowing that actually you're not going to pull on that white shirt again and play for Dartford, testimonial aside, perhaps, you feel absolutely this is the right call?
Absolutely, yeah. There's not a single sort of shred of doubt in my mind, if you know what I mean. I think I'm obviously going to miss it, but there's not a piece of me that sort of says, am I making the right decision or am I making a wrong decision? I think probably, like as I said, as I felt last summer, when all of a sudden, the season had finished the way it had, and I was kind of thinking, what do I do now? Because I decided almost that I was going to give up, but then it was a case of, I'm not actually sure whether this is the right decision. But because I've had that sort of length of time, if you like, sort of building up to the end, it's definitely the right decision for me, and my family as well. So,
Elliot, we spoke obviously the day that it came out that you were going to retire at the end of the season. It was in the programme at the club. And we spoke afterwards, and you produced my two favourite quotes of the season in that interview. And I'll read one of them out first, and we'll talk about that, and then we'll come to the other one afterwards. But you said, sometimes careers finish lifting trophies, and sometimes they finish losing 1-0 at home to Chippenham. How much did it hurt that day?
It did, obviously. I think you structured the question quite well that day, because I think you were leading up to it. But I didn't mean any disrespect to Chippenham at all in that. I think it's more of, like I say, that second season of, the first season of getting relegated from the Conference Premier, I spoke to probably Steve and back then, and I made the decision then that, my aim was going to be to try and get the club back up to that level, before my career ended. And as I said, I've up until probably the end of last year, that was my complete focus, and I was so confident that that was going to happen. But as I said, the way things ended that season, you kind of felt that I had to basically, you know, almost accept it in my mind that maybe that wasn't going to be the case, because as I said, we knew this year was going to be a transitional year. It was very unlikely that we were probably going to be able to make that sort of, you know, charge for the title that we felt that we could have done or should have done last year. So yeah, they do, right? You know, I said to you off air that I've been very lucky with injuries. That's just the way it happens, I suppose. I kind of knew, I felt the calf go, you know, I was playing centre back, so I'm not used to playing in that position, if you like. I'm usually sort of around midfield, jogging around, keeping warm the whole time. And I think we played that game, I started at centre back with Tom Bonner, and I don't think the ball really came in our half for the first 20 minutes. So you're basically sort of standing still. You know, they've just played a big ball over the top. I've turned to run after it and the calf's just gone. I've never had any issues with my calf before. It's just the way it goes. And obviously that's a sort of a standard, probably, you know, standard 4-week injury, if you like, before you can get back on the pitch. But there's only 2 weeks left, so what can you do?
The second quote as well, which I enjoyed from that interview, we talked about whether you'd be coming to the sort of Joe Healy, sort of almost a 2020 cricketer franchise sort of player, and whether you'd you play again. And you ended up by saying that you weren't going to do along those lines, but you just hope that I can fit into my clothes in 6 months' time.
Yeah.
Is that going to be the biggest challenge now you've retired?
I think so. I've got to find something else to do with my time. As I said, probably as any other footballer will tell you when they retire, you've got to fill that gap, right, with something that's going to keep you fit and keep you healthy. I've never had to worry about that before, because really the summer rolls around. You've got month and a half maximum, really, before you're back in for pre-season. So there isn't that too much time to pack on the pounds, if you like. But yeah, I'm gonna have to figure out what I want to do. Running isn't exactly my thing. If there's not a ball to kick or another centre midfielder to kick, I think at the other end of it, then I don't really want to do running. So I'm gonna have to work out something else to do with my time. I want to play a lot of golf, but I don't think really golf gets your heart racing. So I'm gonna have to work out what to do.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Did you always want to be a footballer when you were growing up?
I think so. I mean, looking back, I don't think I ever really thought about it too much. You know, I've always played football from, I'm sure like many others, since I was, you know, old enough to run around and kick a ball. So it's just kind of been always something I've done, and I felt I would always do, if that makes sense. I wouldn't say I'd ever had a burning desire to be a professional footballer. I think as a kid, any kid, you kind of hope that might happen. And obviously I went through the ranks at different pro clubs when I was younger, and it just didn't really happen. But I also don't remember having any sort of, like, you know, burning passion to be a professional footballer, or a real disappointment that I didn't become one, if you like. And maybe that was what set me in, you know, a good position for a non-league career, I guess, because I didn't have burning aspirations to go higher. I was just happy and enjoying what I was doing at whatever level I was playing at.
West Ham was one of those clubs, wasn't it, early on?
Yeah, I was at West Ham for probably 2 or 3 years, from about the age of 10, I think. I was playing on the Sunday team. I think, if I remember rightly, I had, you know, an option, or I was asked to go a few times, and I think we sort of just turned it down. It didn't really seem like it was something I wanted to do. But the guy sort of just kept pestering my mum and dad. You know, we want him to come down. And Glenn Johnson was in the same Sunday team as me growing up. And after, obviously, they were there, you know, watching him as well. And they said, look, you know, why don't you just sort of both come down together? So I think for a couple of years, we travelled down to training, the pair of us.
Were you playing in midfield back then?
Yeah, I think I sort of was a centre midfielder and would fill in at left back every now and then. I think back then you were left footed, so, you know, if you needed someone to go on the left hand side, it was just, okay, well, you're left footed, you go out there. And but I've always preferred, obviously, playing in midfield. Even in my later career at Maidstone and in my first year at Dartford, I was playing on the left. So I probably had a little bit more pace about me back then, but I think when they realised I wasn't actually that skillful or quick, they just moved me into the middle, where I was probably better placed.
Tell us about the time you spent in the States, how that came about.
So what happened after West Ham, I moved to QPR for a couple of years. West Ham didn't used to play games back then. And I just wanted to play games. It was all about training and stuff. And QPR were in a league, whatever that might have been, that played games. So I moved to QPR for a couple of years. But that involved travelling over to West London, sort of, I think, twice in the evenings, twice a week, and then on Saturdays. And obviously, you know, being at school and all that at the time, you know, all that travelling just, it just got on top of me, to be honest, to the point where I just really wasn't enjoying it anymore. And, you know, my mum and dad have never put any pressure on me. They sort of said, look, if you're not enjoying it, you don't have to do it. So once I'd kind of decided that, look, I didn't want to be doing that anymore, I came out of that sort of, you know, I came away from QPR and sort of just went back playing on a Sunday with my friends, basically the same sort of teams I'd played in beforehand. And we had a coach at that time that his son had gone over and done that to the States. And I think that was at a time where I think a lot of people do that now. I say a lot, but it's a lot more popular. I think a lot more sort of young lads, when they get sort of 17, 18, 19, it's more of an option for them now than it probably was back then. So again, I didn't really know anything about it. My mum basically thought it was a fantastic opportunity for me to do. And, you know, as a 17-year-old, you sort of say, oh, you know, yeah, that sounds good sort of thing. I was planning to go to university in this country. And again, it was just before I knew it, I was basically on a plane over there, really, without really thinking about it too much. I remember being on the plane and landing and getting off, and I was on my own, obviously, and just thinking, like, what the hell have I done here, you know? But absolutely amazing experience. It does seem like a long time ago now. You know, I've been back many, many years. I think up to probably 4 or 5 years ago, I always talked about it as if I was just there. Mm. But no, an unbelievable experience. And if anyone gets the opportunity to do it, some of the younger lads that have been at Dartford over the years have asked me about it and gone over and done it. And, you know, 100% recommend it for anyone who's so thinking of doing it.
Primarily to study, and the football was something that you were just able to do alongside that.
Yeah, that's how they structure things in the States. They've got, they don't really have that kind of academy type football. I think it's getting actually bigger now. I think they have more of it now than they probably ever had. But back then, the university game was your route into the professional game. So I think anyone that watches sort of American football or anything like that, they have a draft, and that basically comes out of all the university teams. So you have, it's obviously a great setup, because you get the opportunity to study for a degree, but you're basically playing full-time football as well. You know, we were in every day. The standard, you know, was ridiculously high for me. Mm. I think that was by far and away the highest standard of football that I'll ever play. And I think that made me a better player, purely because basically everyone was probably 5 or 6 steps ahead of me, really. And, you know, that made me focus and made me want to be a better player. And I had to be basically on it every day because, you know, these guys were really good, some of them. So yeah, I got it's a great balance of being able to study for a degree and playing basically full-time football for 4 years.
And the guy who coached you over there, I spoke to him for a piece we did about a year ago, and he talked about you even at quite a young age then, you know, being a leader in that group. Was that just something that came from within you? That was your personality?
Yeah, I think it's natural, really, for me. I think, again, those players footballing-wise were streets ahead of me, and I think what those coaches made me understand was that what I had, maybe it wasn't up to that same level, you know, quality wise or technically, but what I brought to the table was really valuable for a team, you know, because everyone needs that type of person in there. Maybe that sort of English mentality, if you like, where, you know, pretty football might be played around you, but you need someone to sort of, you know, drag everyone up, and if the chips are down, if you like, you need someone to kind of bring everyone together and start winning games. And I think those guys over there really appreciated that from me, because maybe they didn't have a lot of characters that were similar to that. So I kind of, it was at that time I really sort of found myself, you know, finding that sort of sweet spot, if you like, in terms of how I wanted to play football. I think up to that point I've probably been coached the similar way that everyone's been coached, right? They look at your weaknesses and they say, okay, well, you need to become better at this, better at that. But I think in America, I think you spoke to Dave Gifford, right?
That's right.
He was the assistant, but Caleb Porter was the the head coach, and he's obviously gone on to coach for the Portland Timbers. They won the US, the MLS Cup. He's coached for the US national teams. I think he's at Columbus Crew now. He's just switched. So these are really top-end coaches. And that was my first real experience, I think, of being properly coached, if you like. And I think he really made it clear to me that, you know, where he saw me and what he saw my value to the team. And I think that was the first real time that I kind of felt that, you know, I didn't necessarily have to become better at all of these things I was maybe weaker at. It was really starting to focus on, you know, my strengths and how important that could be for a team.
Were you surprised by the standard over there in America at the time? I mean, you're obviously saying, you know, that it was the best you've ever played in, but was you expecting it to be that good?
I moved university. I moved places that where I was at after two seasons. So I went from a Division II school to a Division I school. The Division II school, I'd say, was obviously a lower standard. I think I stood out at that level. But the place that I moved to was about an hour away, much, much higher standard. So when I moved to that level, it's hard to explain the step. It's a big step up. And it went from, as I say, being quite comfortable at a level to really sort of throwing myself in at the deep end, if you like. But I loved it. And I think, you know, you see the standard of, I think it's hard to really fully appreciate the standard of, say, the MLS or whatever, because you see all these big players going over there and doing really well in it, and people just naturally think, oh, well, you know, that's sort of easy. But I tell you, it's not. And I played a few games for a professional team, like in the summer. After sort of you finish university, there's some professional leagues that go on in the summer, which kind of build up to the professional leagues, and that was a step up again. So again, it's just kind of an eye opener. And like I said, I really feel that kind of time shaped me as a player, really, because it also allows you to kind of get past some of the feeling that, oh, I'm not good enough here. But yeah, I might not have been, but you know, there was other things that I could do to really sort of, like, you know, improve the team and improve myself as well. So it was very much kind of a learning curve and a learning experience for me.
We're talking over a decade, I guess, since USA hosted the World Cup at that point as well. What state was football in the country as a whole, did you feel?
Yeah, when I was there, it was the time that David Beckham joined LA Galaxy, if you know what I mean. So it was then, I think, that the game really kind of exploded in the US, because obviously, you know, someone like David Beckham going over there and being kind of like the poster boy for the league, if you like, you know, I think it really took off. You don't see it as much because you're not there, but it is a really big sport. You know, it might not be up to the level of, you know, American football and baseball, but there are a lot of teams and a lot of players over there that play. But I think since then, it's really gone on to the next level, isn't it, with lots of older pros from the game going over and sort of settling down and playing over there. And back when I was there, you could only, I think teams could only have like one or two international players. And obviously clubs started bringing in sort of the likes of David Beckham and, you know, Ashley Cole's gone over there and all these kind of like, you know, top level players. So I think it's a real sort of advert for that game.
Might have to make an exception to your retirement, mightn't you, if you get a trip out there for work?
I don't think so. As I said, I was out of my depth when I was over there before, so 10 years on, I'm definitely out of my depth now.
So when you came back to the UK, did you have maybe a different mentality about your football and getting back into the club game over here?
I think so. I knew what I was good at, if that made sense. So I wasn't worried so much about, oh, I'm maybe not so good at this or not so good at that, which I think players maybe at still the early 20s, you are still a little bit concerned about, right? You're worried that you might not be able to deliver on certain aspects of your game. But I came back, you know, very confident in what I could do. And really, because I'd had that season with Maidstone before I'd gone over there, again, that was a season in men's football at 18, you know, in the Kent League. And that was, you know, 10 to 15 years ago in the Kent League. So, you know, you had to man up, right, when you were playing in the league then, because it was a very different kind of atmosphere probably than what it was today. So again, all these experiences, I think, sort of put me in good stead for coming back into the non-league game when I came back.
Paint a picture of the Kent League in those days then?
It was just men's football, I'd say, right? You know, these guys were you know, at the time, you felt they were all sort of like mid-40s, right? Because you're sort of 17 years old. Probably they were just late 20s, a lot of them, right? But it massively throws you into the deep end because you're just used to playing either sort of academy football or, you know, playing with your mates on a Sunday or whatever it might be, to playing in that sort of atmosphere. And obviously at Maidstone at the time, we were at Bourne Park, you know, the pitch was terrible. But they were getting sort of 400 or 500 people turning up to a Kent League game. Really growing up, I was a Charlton fan, so I had Charlton season tickets and we'd gone to those sort of games and stuff, but I hadn't really ever even thought about non-league football. But so to start playing that at sort of 17, 18 years old, when all of a sudden sort of 500 people are watching you, you know, you really felt like you were playing in front of a crowd, and it was great. So again, having those experiences, I think really sort of set me up for the future. And I think I was lucky to be at Maidstone at that time because, as I said, getting 500 people turning out to a terrible game on a Tuesday night at Bourne Park, you know, that's a real sort of testament to that club. And it gave me an insight into maybe what that club could be going forward.
How did you end up joining Dartford?
My brother had played for Dartford while I was away. So I think he was obviously in his late teens, and he'd played for the club when they won the Ryman North or whatever it was the year before. So while I was away, obviously the new ground had been built and all this kind of stuff. And I am a Dartford boy, right? I went to school next door at the Leeds ETC. So they'd built the ground right next door. And while I'd been away, obviously, you know, there was a lot of buzz around the town and around the club at that time because of what was going on. So me obviously knowing that I was going to come back, it was a place I kind of knew that I was hoping to play at, even before coming back. So when I came back, it didn't quite work out. I did a trial actually. I went and played. It was like a reserve team trial at Dartford when I first came back. Played really well. I thought, you know, I was maybe, I didn't know anyone at the time. You know, it wasn't as if I knew anyone or they knew me. But I think Tony had probably made up his mind about his players and budget and all that kind of stuff before I went there. So after that, I knew Alan Walker and Lloyd Hume from the season before I'd gone. They were still at Maidstone, so it just made sense to give them a call. And, you know, they said, you know, come down and do a pre-season with us at Maidstone. So that was a year I had, you know, prior to joining Dartford.
So once you were in Dartford, it was a very successful start, wasn't it? You had two promotions in the first three seasons there. How special a time was that?
Yeah, I mean, they're the times I look back with, obviously, with the fondest memories. You know, we went into that first season, I think, knowing that we had a really strong team that were going to, you know, possibly be challenging for the Ryman League title at that point. And I think we delivered on that. I think we won probably our first 10 games straight or something like that. And I think at that time that put us X number of points ahead. And I think we sort of went up and down, I think, over the course of the rest of that season. But because of that start, it sort of set us up really nicely. And I think we were, you know, it was just that dressing room we had at that first year, I think, was just, it was one of the best kind of dressing rooms it probably was the best that I've ever been involved in. We just had some great characters in there. Made it really, really enjoyable to come in and play football every week. And I think that showed on the pitch because, you know, we went out and we were smashing teams, basically, and it was just a really enjoyable time. I think we went to Kingstonian on the last game of the season. I think they were second, I think. I think we ended up winning like 5-1 or 6-2 or something like that. So I think that showed just, you know, what a good side we were, that even over the team that were in second place, we needed to go, and I think we needed a draw or whatever to win the league. And we won 6-2. So obviously that was a really special year for the first one. I think then we moved into the Conference South, and I think that was a step up for everyone. There were a lot of changes. I think quite a few players that had won that league the year before had moved on, and we brought a lot of new players in. So it was kind of a transitional year again. But again, great lads like that. That sort of continuation of that special group, even with the players that we lost, it was just a really good time. And I think we managed to keep hold of a lot of those players for that kind of 2 year period. So going into that second season, again, we were a group that had been together, you know, a long, long time, and strengthened by some additions, and I think that season almost took care of itself a little bit in terms of, you know, being up there and fighting against Woking for much of the year for promotion. Obviously they pipped us to the post, but we managed to get up through the playoffs.
So in that first season, when you talked about the good changing room, who were the players who really kind of run it, and how did they do it, you know, making it such a good atmosphere?
Yeah, I think it was very much a collective, but you talk about personalities, right? We had, obviously, Adam Flanagan was in that dressing room, was the captain at the time, but we had people like Danny Dafter, Lee Burns were brought in, Rob Howarth, still one of the funniest men I've ever met in football. I was absolutely devastated when he didn't stay on for that second season, because he just such a funny guy and just sort of really gelled everyone together. But when you think about who else we had, you know, we had myself, Lee Noble, Ryan Hayes was in there, Danny Harris, you know what I mean? We're talking just such a great group of people that, again, just made it such an enjoyable place to be at that time.
So at what point did the captaincy come your way, and what did it mean to lead the team for as long as you did?
I think Flans is obviously, as I said, he was captain for that year. And obviously, like I said, we won the league, and he got to kind of lift the trophy that year. And I didn't really know what to expect. As I said, you know, going into the summer, we'd won the league, so I probably felt at the time that the team would largely say the same and we'd give it a good go in that league above. But I can't remember exactly how many, but there were quite a few changes that year. So obviously Flan left, who was captain, and there was probably five or six other of the guys that left as well. So I remember just coming into pre-season, and Tony sort of took me aside and just said, look, he wanted to give me the captaincy for that year. And it came a little bit out of the blue, to be honest. I hadn't really even thought about it, as I said, because I did just presume that Flans would continue on and stay as skipper. But it wasn't, you know, it didn't work out that way. So it just kind of fell to me in pre-season, really. And obviously it was a great honour. You know, we just had a very successful year that year before, and everyone had made it clear that we were going to try and push on, you know, for that coming season. So, you know, I sort of accepted it with open arms, really.
Tell us a bit about the challenges of being a part-time footballer, which I guess became greater the higher up the pyramid you went.
Yeah, they did. You know, we spoke before about how I've been lucky with my work. The job that I found when I first came back, you know, I made it clear to them, you know, that I was, you know, playing football and all that kind of thing. And they said, yeah, you know, whatever you need to do, as long as you do what we expect you to do, then they were perfectly happy to be kind of flexible with me. And that stayed the same. As I said, I've been with that company now for sort of over 10 years as well. So I've been very, very fortunate from a work point of view of being able to kind of balance everything. But having said that, you know, certainly as we moved up the leagues and went into the National League, or the Conference Premier as it was then, I think I've probably said to you before that it's basically having a full-time job. You know, you might still be a part-time player, but it's effectively having two full-time jobs, because, you know, you're travelling up to Grimsby on a Tuesday night and Gateshead on a Saturday, and games get called off, and then all of a sudden you've got to travel up to God knows where on a Tuesday, and you're basically taking either a full day off the day before or a half day, and getting back at sort of 5-6 in the morning sometimes, and either having a half day off or going in straight into work. It's tough, right, to manage that. I think, luckily, I say at the time, I had, you know, my now wife very accommodating with that kind of thing, but I obviously didn't have a family as such then, so there was less to kind of balance, really. It was just kind of like my own personal life and work. But obviously you do make sacrifices. You miss weddings, you miss, you know, best friends parties and stag do's and all this kind of stuff that goes on, you know, when you're in your 20s. You do miss that stuff. That's kind of the sacrifice part of football that I guess not many people see. But you do it because you love the game, right? And you want to win things, you want to be successful. So it's obviously become a lot harder to manage as I've got older, and certainly as I've, you know, as families come around. And really that's what's played a big part in me wanting to give up, basically, because I do want to spend my time and my weekends, you know, elsewhere, away from running after young kids on a football pitch, basically.
For the latest reaction and reports from the games that matter, visit our website at kentonline.co.uk.
Well, you talk about moving up through the leagues as well. I mean, obviously, it might be a different answer because you play at Prince's Park, which is obviously a nice stadium and all that, but did you notice the difference in grounds as you go up? I mean, obviously, when you get into the conference, you're playing at some proper ex-football league stadiums, aren't you?
Yeah, I think Playing at Prince's Park's been, obviously it's a great place to play, but it's made it tough, right? Because teams turn up and they think, oh, it's nice here, and I'll play well here. So even teams that, you know, might have been struggling in the league at the time, you know, that's kind of a, it's a really nice place for them to turn up and play football. And I think we've often struggled against teams that are probably a little bit lower down the league because they've you know, really sort of stepped up their game when they turn up. And really, I feel that's probably how we then looked at it when we moved up. Because, as I said, when we went into the Conference Premier, we were playing against teams like, you know, Luton, Mansfield, Cambridge, you know, some real big sort of ex-Football League teams that probably had no right to be in that league at the time. That was kind of how we felt, if you like, going to those grounds. And some amazing experiences. I remember coming down and walking out at Kenilworth Road. That's still one of my all-time kind of favourite memories from playing. That felt like I was a proper footballer then, if you like, you know, because there you have to sort of walk up a very long tunnel. It sort of goes right the way back to the top of the stand. And when we went in, I think it's like a normal football ground, right? Probably everyone's out in the bars or whatever. So it was half empty. So it didn't really feel like there was much of an atmosphere going on. But then when you walk up and then you come back down for the game, obviously I'm captain, so you sort of come out of the tunnel first, and it was literally full, and you just felt like, wow, this is like being involved in a proper football game, if you like. And we won that day as well. So
didn't the Luton fans clap you off?
They did, yeah. They weren't as nice to their own team, I'll tell you that. Again, going back to what I said about being a proper football ground, you know, when you go to sort of Premier League games or whatever and things don't go right, the manager just gets hurled abuse. And yeah, it was one of those days where I think we played really well. We rode our luck in the second half. I think they probably hit the bar 3 or 4 times. You know, we could have easily walked off. I think we won 2-0, but we could have easily lost like 5 or 6-2. But, you know, it was just our day, basically. And our fans behind the goal, there was, I don't know how many, but it was just a brilliant day. You know, we got to kind of celebrate it, and, you know, they got booed off. They were making substitutions, and their team, the whole sort of 4 sides of the stand, the crowd were booing and all that kind of stuff. So playing against that, you know, it's almost like it goes for you, if you like, because you just felt, oh, this is brilliant, right? It's just sort of a little old part-time team, you know, turning over a team like Luton. And yeah, they were all sort of huddled around the kind of the tunnel as we walked off and all applauding us. So that was a special time.
You move up the divisions, as we say. I mean, how comfortable did you feel in yourself as a player as you make the step up each time, and you're coming up against better and better players as you go?
Yeah, obviously I enjoyed it. I think at the time I was kind of, I felt like in my prime as well, if you like. I felt it was probably I was as quick as I was ever going to be. And, you know, I was that kind of right balance of being, you know, experienced and young enough to continue to kind of play the game, if you like. So that time probably fell right for me, you know, making that step up. Like, I certainly couldn't make that step up now. I'm far too slow. But I think at the time it was obviously a great experience to play against better players. It was an eye opener again. But again, going back to what I said earlier, I'd had that eye opener before where I'd been playing with players that were just miles better than me anyway. So again, it's finding, you know, what you're good at and making a difference in the game. And really for me, that's always been kind of, you know, working hard, getting around players, trying to win the ball back, and then giving the ball to players that can really, you know, make a difference in the game. And I don't think that really changes, or it didn't change for me going up the leagues. I still was very much kind of focused on, you know, what I was good at. And really, again, for that first season, you know, we were flying that first year, and it felt just like a continuation of the year before, really. Although we were playing against better teams, you know, the results were the same, if you like. We were still winning games regularly. So although it was a step up, it just felt like a kind of a continuation of the success that we'd had.
So having that feeling of being like a proper footballer and holding your own or more than against really good players, full-time players, was there ever a point in that season where you thought, oh, actually, I would quite like to give this a go and see if I could be a serious player?
Maybe a little bit, but again, I'd say not too much. I was more interested again in just being, okay, well, we've got a fantastic group of lads here. We were turning up and just having a brilliant time every week. Again, turning over teams like Luton at their place, beating Mansfield on TV. You know what I mean? For me, it just didn't really get any better than that, if you like. I was at an age where I was probably late 20s, so it wasn't as if I was early 20s and thought, oh, okay, I can make a change here and really start to kick on. And again, maybe that was a good thing, right? Because it wasn't in the back of my mind that, oh, I need to play well here to get noticed or whatever. It was very much just kind of enjoying that moment, if you like. And I think that summer was probably the first time where I kind of had interest from a lot of other places. You know, I think because we played in that league and they were probably looking at it, other teams in that league were probably looking at it and saying, okay, well, you know, Dartford's a part-time team. There's some good players there. We did well that, you know, they'd probably try and pick us off, which they did. Obviously, they took a few of our better players in that summer, different teams. But that was probably the first time I got some interest. And again, I didn't really take it beyond the first kind of initial touch point, if you like. It was just, you know, I was happy where I was and I was, you know, just very much wanted to continue that.
How often throughout your career do you think you've played games either with some sort of injury or where you've not been fully fit and you're playing through something?
Probably over 90%.
Seriously?
Yeah. Like, I don't think as a player you're ever fully fit. I don't think anyone can tell you that. Even if you are fully fit, you're probably completely knackered from the Tuesday game or the week at work you've had, right? So I often say that, you know, Friday night, I feel on top of the world because I finish work, I've come home and you just think, oh, I could play football now. And then you wake up on a Saturday and all of a sudden it just takes over you and you're just tired going into a game. So I think, you are injured, you pick up knocks, you pick up strains, you pick up, you know, whatever it is over the course of the week. But that's non-league football, right? You haven't got a squad of 40 players to choose from and you don't play when you're just 100%. If I'd played when I was just 100%, I probably would have hardly ever been out there. You know, there's been times where I've, especially, you know, a few years ago, I remember Tony calling me in the morning and saying, look, are you any good? And I said, look, no, my knee is completely gone. Like, I can't play today. And I turned up at mid, 1 o'clock, and he sort of asked me into the office, said, look, I need you today. And I went, you know, all right, if you want me to play, I'll play. So, and that's kind of how it is. I think you've got to have that kind of mentality, to get through games at our level, because I think if you don't have that, you're probably never going to play.
What was it then that drove you on to play when you weren't fit, or to keep going year after year? You know, 10 years at one club is a long time.
It is, yeah. I just want to win games. I think I've said to you before that for me the enjoyment of football is completely tied up in the result, whether that's a good thing or not. You know, I really don't get that much enjoyment, if you like, from just stepping out on a pitch and playing a game. If I could step out on the pitch, play the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes and we'd won 1-0, I'd happily take that. It's so interlinked with the result, and I think, again, that's a good thing, but it also can be a negative thing, because certainly, you know, the year before that, I got very, very little enjoyment from the game, purely because everything was about the result. You know, you were basically saying, okay, well, great, we won this week. You'd have a good time for half an hour in the change room afterwards, and then your mind just completely flicks to the next game, whether it's on a Tuesday or the next Saturday, and you think, right, we've got to win that one now. Because, again, I wanted to walk off at the end of the year with that.
You sort of made it your mission, hadn't you?
Yeah, basically. And I think, not just for a season, I think, and that's probably why, you know, the times come where, you know, I just don't want to do it anymore, because, you know, we got relegated for 2 years in a row, and really I think since that first year, which was what, six, seven years ago now, the aim has been to get to that point. And, you know, it seems like, a you know, 6 years is a long time, and when you're doing it week by week like that, you know what I mean, and needing results and all this kind of stuff, it's a long time. You know, there's a lot of sleepless nights over that time. Again, you go back to saying you take it personally. I really did. And each and every week, it was, to get that result was so important. And that puts a lot of pressure on yourself as well. And I think, again, going back to what we said earlier, I think that's maybe why I've enjoyed this year a bit more, because that pressure was off me, if you like. And I got to actually enjoy turning up and playing games. I think there was periods this year where I've sort of actually looked around a little bit and said, oh, actually, this is all right. Mm. You know what I mean? Rather than thinking, oh, well, you know, we need to win today and we need to win next week. So, that's just how I've always kind of been. And again, I take my enjoyment from winning games.
No offence to those clubs, but I guess it's always a great thing when you know it's your last trip to Western or your last trip to Truro, that you're not going to make that journey again, aren't you?
Yeah, I said that about Gateshead a few times, and then we always ended up seem to get him in drawn in cups. And then you end up back there and you never want to see places again. But no, St Albans is the one for me. We always go to St Albans and we always got trounced. It was always a boiling hot sunny day. you were just running around after, you know, they seem like they've got 15 players out there and we'd always lose about three or four. So I'm very pleased that I never have to go to St Albans again.
You mentioned that the way last season that you flicked from, you know, once you've won a game, you then think about the next one immediately. You've talked about also that season when you kept losing most weeks in the conference and you got the reprieve at the end of the season. How much did you dwell on those defeats when it happened and how tough a time was that personally for you?
Yeah, massively. I think I was probably just a terrible person to be around at that time because, especially, you know, family take the biggest hit, right? Because you leave from the ground and you might not see your teammates again for a few days, but your family's got to put up with your terrible mood for that time. And really, because of the way it was going, that mood probably never lifted. You know, it wasn't as if, oh, well, you know, we've lost today, but that's disappointing. You know, you're back onto the next one. You know, after a while, that sort of, that pressure really mounts and it never really leaves you, I don't think. And as I said, going, you know, I did take it personally and I was kind of thinking, you know, we'd had a lot of successful years where I felt I'd kind of carried things a little bit and I'm thinking to myself, look, I need to do something here. What more can I do? But really at that time, there is nothing more you can do. We're a part-time team, but I remember time in that year where we felt like we were a full-time team, right? We were in for extra training, we were in for meetings and, you know, all this stuff that you try and do to change things around. But it's not possible sometimes. And, you know, even sometimes the more you do, the worse it makes it, right? Because you just think, you know, I've got to get away from this. And I think that was why I didn't necessarily feel, no player wants to get relegated, right? But I felt that first year especially, that it didn't faze me as much because I felt that it was kind of a valiant effort, you know, right? We're a part-time team. We'd had a lot of success. The personnel had changed around the club and we'd gave it a proper good go, right, against teams that were a lot bigger than us with, you know, much more, you know, financial muscle than us. So although we were at the bottom when we did get relegated, it didn't feel like it was a failure, if you like. It felt like we'd tried our best. And I think everyone around the club at that point probably felt the same way, right? I think everyone kind of understood the challenges that we faced. But obviously then we had the reprieve that, sort of, so you get to that summer and you think, okay, we've been relegated, but now we've got a season back in that level. I think Tony had gone out and recruited players for that level, and we had kind of a good team, you know, sort of set up to kind of do well in that league. So you kind of feel like the disappointment that you'd had was going to change, but then to get that reprieve and it just puts you straight back in that situation again, and the kind of, you know, that pressure had lifted and then all of a sudden it had sort of gone straight back onto us again. You're just thinking, oh no, really, you know, we've got another year of this. And that the problem then was that second year we were just so far off it. I think the first year we got relegated, we were, as I said, we give it a good go and we were maybe losing 1-0s or, you know, whatever. But that second season we were just so far away from it. You know, I've been in games that we were just absolutely nowhere near it against some teams. And that's even more disheartening, right? Because, you know, you haven't even got a hope or a sniff of trying to win. You know, you're just trying to keep the score down, basically. And I think that was what put the club back further than it should have done, really. And I think that was quite unfair for that situation to happen. Again, through no fault of our own. You know, other clubs having financial trouble and that kind of thing just put us a long way back than we really needed to be at that time, which was a shame.
One of the benefits, I guess you could say, of playing at the conference level, obviously you get games on TV and that kind of exposure as well, but also you have squad numbers and names on the back of your shirt. What was it like seeing your name on the back of the shirt for the first time?
Yeah, that felt good. You know, I think, again, every player wants that. You know, they might not say they do, but having that and you step up, and obviously we just had that success the year before coming in the new season, and you've got your squad number, your name on your back, you're playing on TV, like you said, all these kind of things, going and playing against teams like, you know, like Luton and places like that, is just a fantastic experience. And I think, again, that probably showed on the pitch because we were just a bunch of lads that had a lot of success the year before and just went out and just completely enjoyed what was going on the next year. I spoke about thinking about results. That year was probably, you know, in leading up to that year, I wasn't thinking about results at all. You were just going on the pitch and just enjoying yourself and the results were coming. And that's why I said it's probably a good thing and a bad thing that you think in that way, because, again, once you've had that success, all you want to do is get that back. But then things switch, right, between becoming, oh, I'm really enjoying just playing my football, to we need to win today and we need to win next week and the week after. And then that kind of changes your perspective on the game a bit, I think.
Even in the seasons when you got relegated, there were some great moments in there. There's a couple of games that particularly stick in my mind. One, because it was the worst weather I've ever watched a game in. you probably know the game I'm talking about, Cambridge at home, and they were flying high going for the title. Your memories of that game, first of all?
Yeah, obviously it was good because I think we played the second game against Cambridge was later in the year, so I think that was the first time we played, and obviously they'd taken Tom Bonner and Tom Champion from us in the summer, who again were just two key lads in the dressing room and had been for a few years up to that. So playing against them in that setup was odd because they'd gone to full-time football. As you say, Cambridge were flying at the time. You know, they were really going for it that year. And so playing against them on that day was kind of a weird feeling, if you like, because these were mates that you'd, you know, shared dressing rooms and shared, you know, success with. To then all of a sudden playing on the other team, it was a weird situation to be in from the start. But I can't remember exactly what happened, but I think, was it like 3-3 or something like that?
It was. You went 2-0 down, you got it back to 2, or you scored a penalty, and then went ahead with probably Danny Harris's best goal he's ever scored in the second half. But then the last 5 minutes of that game, I'm not exaggerating, it was basically a hurricane and a monsoon all thrown into one.
Yeah, it was a crazy game in itself because, yeah, we'd gone behind, managed to get it back. And again, Cambridge were doing really well that year. So again, for us struggling in the league, if you like, it was a great sort of performance from us. So a good result as well. But yeah, the heavens opened at the end. And I think I was sort of applauding the supporters, I think. And I turned around and I was literally the only one on the pitch. I turned around and literally everyone else had gone off it. And I thought, what am I doing here? I need to get myself off. But no, it was a good one.
And I think it was the following season when Bristol Rovers dropped down into the conference and you played them on a mud bath. It was like Ronnie Radford type pitch. And again, managed to get a result. I mean, the conditions probably played to you, didn't they? It turned it into a real scrap.
Yeah, that's... I love playing in those sort of games, let's be honest, because, you know, the guys with a bit more quality on the ball can't run away from you as fast as they might do on a normal day. So we had similar thing with Hampton, didn't we, last season, where Alfie Pavey scored that last minute goal. And I remember the ref in that game told us that, you know, we're going to call this off, sort of thing. And we went over there, and I think me and their other captain just said, look, we're here now, we're all soaking wet and muddy. I think I went through about two or three different shirts that game because you couldn't see it. And obviously we managed to nick a last-minute winner in that one. So, yeah, I've always, you know, they're level as those games, aren't they? And they're just there to be enjoyed. And I think those were games that I really enjoy. I think Ryan Hayes scored a free kick in that Bristol game. Again, Bristol, such a big side, you know, and us managed to beat them. Probably about the only time that Hayes managed to hit the target from a free kick. But yeah,
and never mentioned it again, I'm sure.
No, absolutely not. I think the Beatles garage at the bottom of Dartford Hill must have about 48 million of our footballs from Ryan Hayes' free kicks. But
I was going to say, ask you about some of those guys that you played with for a long time. Ryan, first of all, I mean, so much has been said and written about him, but just how will you remember him as a teammate and a friend?
Yeah, I think, you know, although you share the changing room with lots of players, I think lots of stuff's been written about the fact that, you know, the five of us or so that have been there for a long, long time, you know, you form real friendships during that time. And I think that is slightly different to some of, you know, players that come and go, for example, that you might have great times with while they're in the changing room, but you might not keep in touch or that kind of thing. But certainly, you know, there are some friendships there that we've built up over the years that will remain, you know, for a long, long time. And Ryan's one of them, obviously a special footballer, frustrating as hell, you know, especially for someone like me that, like I said before, you know, you do your best to run around, work hard, win the ball back, then you give it to Ryan and he gives it away within 4 seconds. So very, very frustrating at times, but, you know, you can't speak highly for him enough of what he does the other way. You know, of those 140 odd goals that I've scored, he must have assisted at least half, probably more. No, you know, not counting, but it must have been somewhere like that. So, you know, a special player that was able to kind of deliver in special moments for us.
What about Lee Noble, someone that you played a huge amount of games with in the centre of midfield and obviously got to know him very well over that time?
Yeah, I had to do an interview for someone else and they asked me kind of like who the best player I'd played with was. And I said Lee, because I just think he's got everything, right? He's very similar to me in terms of he's got that sort of fight and aggression and everything else, but he's got miles more quality, I think, on the ball. And I think he's able to do both sides of it. I think he's got absolutely everything you'd probably want as a footballer, not just in the non-league game, but higher as well. The same person asked me who the best player I'd played against was, and I said, well, I'm not sure, but I've never seen anyone better than Lee. I just think he's got everything. And how... a full-time professional team didn't snap him up at some point years ago, I'll never know. But he's the sort of player, I think, that would have been the best player in the team, regardless of what standard he played at. He's that sort of player.
Darren Ibrahim obviously has moved on to take a coaching role at Charlton, but he's been a big figure at the club while you've been there.
You know, I loved Dale. I was obviously gutted when he left. Everyone will know that goalkeepers tend to be a bit weird, but Dale's weird, but in a good way. I think we missed him. We talk about characters around the changing room and that type of thing, and Dale was definitely one of them. And to lose him halfway through the season, again, that was another sort of spanner in the works, if you like, from this past year that probably wasn't forecasted beforehand. So great lad, great goalkeeper, and you know, I think he's made a great sort of a good choice for himself. You know, I think he wants to go on and he wants to coach, and you know, he's more often than not, he's out there at the Valley warming up keepers before the game now. So I think it's a fantastic move for him, even though he's not playing or is not playing as much as he was.
And one man we can't not talk about is Tony, who brought you to the club, is still there in a different role now, and really is Mr. Dartford. Can you sum up how influential he's been in, one, the growth of the club, and also your time there?
You know, I don't think anyone can really underestimate the amount of time and effort that someone like Tony, but obviously, you know, Steve Irvin, Dave Skinner and other people like that around the club really put into it. Obviously, Tony as a director of the club, we're working with the academy, working with the first team, obviously, for so many years. You know, the club is built on people like that. And the success that the team's had over not just the last, say, 10 or whatever years since the new ground was built, but before that, when, you know, the club near enough went bust, and to sort of drag it back from those sort of lower levels, it's all thanks to people like Tony and those other guys. So, you know, I can't speak highly enough of him and what he was able to give to us. As I said, his ability to create a dressing room of characters and players that would sort of, you know, give 100% and just die for the shirt, basically, that I think was second to none. You know, every changing room basically that we had, even in those relegation years, just were top group of lads. You know, no bad eggs in there or anything like that. You know, we just really enjoyed being around each other, regardless of how maybe results went on the pitch. So his ability to do that was, you know, was excellent year after year.
And as a Dartford boy, how important is the football club, you know, the stability and success of that football club to the local community, bearing in mind all the effort that people like Steve and Dave and the others put in?
I think obviously it's huge, right? I mean, I'm a Dartford boy. I've moved out of the area a little bit now, but obviously when I was living in Dartford, you know, you'd walk around, you know, your supermarkets and stuff on a Sunday, and people would come up to you and talk about the game and all that kind of stuff. So it is a real key part. You know, there's a lot of Dartford supporters, even the ones that maybe don't go to as many games as some of them. Obviously, some of them are there each and every week, home and away, but it's very much a community club. As I said, you've got, you know, some fantastic people that are working, you know, both with the first team and behind the scenes. And that's what makes it special, I think. Probably everyone says this, right? Everyone, you know, talks very highly of the people that are around the club. But there are some really, really special people there that just want to see the club, not only, you know, on the pitch, but off it, be successful. And as I said, there's a lot of hard work that goes into that, which people don't see. And, you know, I'm sure there's some very, very successful times ahead, and those people deserve it.
Scored 142 goals in your career. My image in my head of you playing it is you bursting forward, sort of getting onto the end of things in penalty areas, arriving late and scoring goals. Was you always like that? Did you develop that over a period of time? Is that a conscious thing?
I think so. I think maybe it did develop over time, but I certainly, again, I've always been quite good at understanding what I'm good at and what works well. And those sort of runs, I think, you know, you have to be willing to make them, right? You have to run 60, 70 yards sometimes to get an opportunity to score. And I was kind of willing to do that, and I felt like I got the rewards from doing it. To the point where it almost just become a natural part of my game, to the point where you don't even think about it, right? I can't say that many times that I've consciously felt like, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. But people joke that I'm just Johnny on the spot, or right place, right time. But there must be some sort of, you know, there must be some sort of like natural ability to do that. Because again, it's not like I've worked on it. It's not like I've been out on the training pitch going, right, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to learn from. It just sort of happens, basically.
And is that the same with Hazy, that, you know, you say he's assisted all those goals? Was that something that just happened naturally between the two of you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Ryan's delivery into the box is fantastic. More often than not, you know, he puts it into an area where someone should score from. right? He might stick the odd one that goes over the stand, but more often than not, it's in that sort of area. And I've always been quite good at just attacking the ball, right? If a ball comes in from a corner or from a cross, you know, I want to get on the end of it. So mix that with Ryan's ability to put the ball into a good area. Probably is the reason why it led to so many goals over the years.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, I remember talking to Alfie Pavey last season, towards the end, and I guess it's a reflection also on your desire to go up and leave Dartford on that big high. But he said how you would message him constantly and be on his case to be the best he can and make sure we win on Saturday and do this and do that. From hearing that, it's surprising that coaching isn't the way forward for you, that you know you don't want to be sort of mentor and guiding young players through.
Yeah, it's not necessarily that I don't want to do it. It's more of, you know, I've never trained in that area, or you know, I don't feel that, other than to give people encouragement, you know, I don't think I've got the technical knowledge to say, oh, this is what you should do here, this is what you should do here. Even listening to, say, Coyley and whatever do a team talk on a Saturday, like, he says things that I probably would never think of, right? But I think my ability to understand what motivates people, and you know, through being with people in the dressing room, you do understand that, you know, certain people like an arm round them, you know, someone like Ryan Hayes might need a rocket every now and then. My ability to maybe understand that and get the message across has always been quite good. And obviously you mentioned Alfie, but he got taken out of the team a lot, and for a young lad who was scoring goals, right, he was, you know, scoring a lot of important goals for us, to score a goal and then come out of the team, you know, that can play on your mind sometimes. And I remember at Boreham Wood, we went there in a cup game, and again he was out of the team, and you could tell he was just really upset, right? And I think, you know, he went round the corner, and I, you know, just sort of put my arm round, you know, once the team talk's done and everyone's getting ready, you just sort of go over and you just give him a pat and you just say, look, take your chance when it comes on, that type of thing. And I've always been quite good at noticing those little things, and you know, when a player might have been not involved or hasn't played in a couple of weeks, you know, you do recognise these things. And you again, I want to win games, right? And Alfie Pavey, for example, was absolutely flying last season, and you knew that even if he came on late, you had a really good chance of him scoring a goal and winning a game. So you needed someone like him to be, you know, really on it, regardless of whether he was starting or coming on. So yeah, it's all part and parcel of wanting to win the game. Like I said before, you know, I want to do all I can to win a football game, and that not only means, you know, what I can kind of deliver on the pitch, but it might mean like that, you know, putting an arm around someone or sending someone a text on a Friday night just to make sure that you give yourself the best opportunity to win a game on a Saturday.
Is that because you're the captain, or you were the captain, is that why it is, or is that just, that's how Elliot Bradbrook's made up?
It's probably a mix of both. You know, it is natural. Like I said, I'm not making a deliberate effort to do these things. It is just something that I've always done and still do today. As I said, I'm not the captain anymore, but certainly I still send little messages around to different people, you know, when I feel like they need to pick me up or put my arm around someone in the changing room, or try and be that sort of leader on a pitch as well. Because I think, you know, you've spoken to Coyley and Flan, and we haven't had probably those sort of characters like that in the same sort of numbers as what we've had in the past, which makes my, you know, my job, Tom Bonner's job, you know, the people that are more vocal, if you like, even more important in a situation like that, because you do need people to step up. And you know, like I said, it's all about winning games, and you need people in your dressing room that kind of that way orientated to kind of try and deliver what the message of the manager is out on the pitch.
You've always played down your individual achievements kind of in the context of what you've done as a team, but I'll keep banging on about them because I think now that you've hung your boots up, they're even more impressive. Your goal ratio over 10 years was 1 in 3 for a central midfielder who maybe couldn't run towards the end. You must take a lot of pride in that. You know, you second highest score in the club's history. Your name will always be on those records.
Yeah, I do. I think, like I said, I have always played it down, but mainly because that has never been the most important thing to me. Like, you know, it come to the point over the last few years where I was so desperate to win, I'd happily sit in the stand and watch the guys as long as they were winning. But, you know, on reflection, I'm sure, as again, it probably hasn't really sunk in that I'm never going to play properly again just now. But I'm sure in the future, those sort of stats will be, you know, kind of important to me, and I look back on them with a lot of pride. I think I've scored 10 goals in 9 years. I was hoping to get to that point again this year, but I got stuck on 9. I like to think that I'd maybe have got one more if I was fit enough to play into the last few games. But
you took a fair few penalties over the years. Was that something you practiced?
No, I hated taking penalties. Really? Hated it. I didn't like it at all. I think it's kind of always seen as, oh, just, you know, it's a penalty, is an easy goal, but I've never enjoyed it. I've never, even when the whistle went for a penalty, I'd kind of think, oh no, I've got to take one now. But again, it's a responsibility thing, right? I'd take them and invariably they'd go in. So again, you want someone that's going to take it with a bit of confidence and say, right, this is going in and whatever. But
so did it just fall into your lap because no one else was really sticking their hand up?
I think so. I think Charlie, obviously we'd have a few different penalty takers over the years, but I think Charlie Sheringham was taking the penalties, and then he, that season we got promoted, I think he left, he went to Bournemouth, and obviously he was the penalty taker, so he'd left, and I think it just sort of fell to me that, you know, I don't know what happened, but basically I was taking the next one, it went in, and I think, you know, you just can kind of continue that. I think we've got the classic, probably every team has it, where if you miss two, you're gone, and I never missed two in a row, so I'd miss one, but the next one would go in, and it was only really until this past season where I missed two in a row. I missed one at the end of last year, and I missed at Bath at the first game of the season, and I thought, you know, that's me done. As I said, I've never enjoyed taking them anyway, so that rule played in, you know, kind of nicely. And again, it almost timed well, because Charlie came back to the club and, you know, he's keen to take them, so as long as they go in, that's all that really matters.
We normally go on to the quick fire questions. I've got to say that you've probably actually answered many of them, the ones I've already got in the lovely chat we've been having, Elliot, but one thing I did want to let you have a chance to talk about, which we have, fortunately, from my point of view, glossed over, is the playoff final win over my beloved Welling. Tell us your recollections of the day now and how much it meant to you as a homegrown boy to win promotion in that manner.
Yeah, it was obviously, like I say, it was special because we had a great group of lads and we'd sort of had a good fight with Woking for the title. And they deservedly won. I think they were a better side than us at the time. I think I'm not sure how many points they won by in the end, but you know, they were deserved winners. But we really felt that we were the second best team in that league and that we deserved to kind of go up. And obviously that was my first ever experience playing in a playoff situation. So again, it was all new. We went to Basingstoke in the semi-final. Obviously, I think it was whatever the Tuesday after the season ended. And they battered us, to be honest. They were so much better than us. But we nicked a 1-0 win. I think Lee Noble scored, giving us a 1-0 lead going into that second game. And I don't want to steal another one of your questions, but maybe that goal I scored in that playoff semi-final second leg, a header that went in the far corner, that's probably my favourite goal for the club, because that took us from that 1-0 win in the first leg to a 2-0 win, and, you know, 2-0 up overall, and that kind of put us in the final. So that goal really sticks in my mind as kind of the favourite, if you like. But then to go into that final day, obviously it was a home game, it was basically a sellout, it was against Welling, who's obviously a local rival that we played many times over the years. It just all kind of fell into place a little bit. I look back at that day and I'm thinking Welling just didn't really cause us any problems. It was almost just sort of a nothingy game, if you know what I mean. I think we scored early through, you know, Nobes again scored a fantastic goal. I was actually doing my shoelace up at that point. So I remember being sort of on the ground looking over the other side of the pitch as he scored that goal. And obviously I had to, you know, throw my laces and just run over and celebrate when he scored. So that was a really sort of special moment. But for the rest of the game, it sort of just flew by. And I think we talked again about thinking about the result. During that game, I just never thought about the result. I didn't think about what a win would do or what it meant or whatever. And I think probably the favourite moment on a football pitch was probably about 5 seconds before that final whistle went, because I think it was then that I remember in my mind, I can look over and we looked at Champs, and Champs was playing centre mid next to me, and we just sort of caught eyes with each other, and it was like 4 seconds before the whistle was going to go because they were taking a goal kick. And obviously the ref was standing right next to us. And I remember just catching his eye and just thinking, and it was in that moment that you kind of felt, you know, I can't believe we've just won this sort of thing. And you sort of collapse, you know, the whistle goes, you collapse to the floor, and it's just everyone, you know, jumping on each other and running on the pitch. It was just an amazing feeling. And it's those sort of feelings that keep you going for the rest of your career, basically, because you just want that. You want that back.
What's the feeling like when you're the captain, you get to lift the trophy? Because obviously you didn't do it the first time. It was Flan that did it. In the Ryman, so to lift the trophy as the captain, what's that like as a player?
Yeah, it's obviously you know, it's great. You know, that's what you play for. And like I said, that's what I've always played for, right? It, not necessarily just to lift the trophy, but to have that success and have that, you know, have that kind of outcome to the end of a year. So again, being at the home ground and lifting the trophy and, you know, the champagne going everywhere and taking it round and in the bar afterwards, you know, you go out with the boys on the night afterwards. But just the whole experience really was just a fantastic kind of situation to be in. And obviously, like I said, that's what keeps you going, because you're desperate to have those sort of good times again. And everyone talks about, oh, you know, you should enjoy it while you're in the moment. And I don't have any regrets there. Like, I really felt like I did enjoy it. It wasn't as if I look back now and saying, oh, I should have made more of that, because in that moment, I really felt like I made the most of it. Right, I really, really enjoyed it. So it's not like I look back with any regrets on that time thinking, oh, I should have enjoyed it more. It's just, you know, you kind of look back with a little bit of regret that you never really got to have that experience again, because I didn't. You know, that was, what, 7 years ago or whatever it might be. And that's the last time I really got to feel like that, if you like, at the end of a game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to drop my quickfire questions in the bin today. My last question is about two people you've mentioned already who were there, you know, right at the start of your football journey, taking you to games at QPR and West Ham, and continued coming to watch you at Dartford over the years. Your mum and dad, how important have they been?
You can't really put that into words, I don't think. I think the sacrifices that they would have made to get me to those games and to come and support me and all that sort of stuff, it's amazing, really. I remember my dad, like, as I said, I travelled to, had to go from basically Dartford to West London, you know, 3 or 4 times a week to training at QPR. And my dad had invariably come after work, get the tube over to East London from the city to then travel back home with me. You know what I mean? Little things like that. And me working now, you know, you think at the end of the day, at sort of 7, 8 o'clock at night, he's worked all day to then make that journey all the way over just to, you know, to sit with your son on the way home. You know, it's amazing. I can't thank them enough. And what I really appreciate is that they never tried to coach me. My mum's very knowledgeable about football as well, but they never tried to overcoach me. You know, my dad would just give me advice and say, look, maybe you should think about this or think about that. But, you know, they were never like, you know, they were never that parent that shouts at the kid on the sideline. They just, you know, allowed me to kind of get on with it and enjoy it. And they've always done that. Like I said to you earlier, it was getting to the point where I wasn't enjoying it at QPR anymore. And I remember them sitting me down at the table at home and just saying, look, you don't have to do this. If you're not enjoying it, don't do it. And really, I needed someone to say that, because at that age, it's just something you do, right? It's just like, oh, I'm, you know, this is what I do, and you do it. You don't really think that you've got a choice almost. But, you know, they made it obvious that I always had a choice. And again, you know, my mum taking the lead in terms of sending me to the States and all that kind of stuff, I'd have never done that without them as well. So, you know, I love them very much. I can say that on air. And, you know, I appreciate that, all they've done for me.
Elliot, that's all we've got time for, unfortunately. I mean, thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. We've enjoyed looking back over your career. Now you're a retired footballer. It'll be a certainly different experience watching Dartford next season without you playing in the team. But thanks very much for your time, and we wish you well, and hopefully you enjoy your young family and you all prosper, and wish you all the very best for the future.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.